And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Here's the thing that I like about what's going on at DC Comics in the 1960s. They're running these PSA things in the front of the books. And in Adventure Comics 319, Bob Hope makes an appearance. Yep. And you know, they're talking about religion and how, oh, you know, Christians have the golden rule and it's not really a law. And then some kids are bullying another kid. And then Bob Hope steps up and says, hey, listen, I've been all around this country, all around this world, and I've seen all sorts of religions. And he pulls out a sheet of paper to show these kids what three different religions say, what the Christians say, what the Buddhist says, and what the Islamic religions say. And it's, you know, it's all, you know, take care of your fellow man, do all, you know, the golden rule thing. And it's kind of cool that they're throwing in these PSAs and then Bob Hope's getting on board with that in this issue.
Yeah, and this is important. Bob Hope at this point in time is a DC superstar. He starred in a monthly comic book called The Adventures of Bob Hope that ran for like 17 years. Starting in the 50s, he had a book and Jerry Lewis had a book, actually. And both of them, at this point, I think, are, if not high in DC sales ranking, they're definitely meaningful, because in 1961, you didn't go 100 issues without selling books.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Jerry Lewis was selling very close to the same amount of comics, or close to what Superman was doing, as well as Scrooge McDuck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Adventure Comics number 319, The Legion Suicide Squad. Published April 1964. Written by Edmund Hamilton with art by John Forte. The Legionnaires face certain death to save a distant planet. A world that doesn't even want their help.
The Legion's Suicide Squad, Matthew. I need to point out.
Yes.
Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad, appeared in 58 or 59. So this is not technically the first appearance of the Suicide Squad over at DC Comics.
Correct. But the Suicide Squad that appeared in 58 is not the villains working for the government Suicide
Squad. Yeah, this
squad.
Was, wasn't this the guys on Dinosaur Island?
Yep. It was, in fact, Task Force X, and it did have Rick Flagg in it, as I recall. But yeah, it was a bunch of military guys who were, I think, just fighting dinosaurs. But yes, Suicide Squad is at this point a known property for DC Comics.
So it's just cool. it just kind of trips me out when we have like the Legion of Substitute Heroes showing up and saying, well, we will have to be the Suicide Squad that goes in to solve this problem. And the title of the issue is the Legion Suicide Squad. And it's like, wow, OK, they're really pushing hard on this Suicide Squad thing. You know, there's already a Suicide Squad over there in the was it War Comics or whatever they were in.
Our Army at War, I think,
that's
what it is.
But
also, you have to remember that with the exception of Superman and Batman crossing over in World's Finest Comics, which had been happening since like 1943, DC wasn't really a shared universe yet. And
which is really, really weird, because when do we get the Justice League?
The League starts in 61.
Okay.
And, you know, it. we are getting to the point now where you're starting to see this, but even those Justice League stories, the things that are happening in the Justice League don't reflect what's happening in the solo books for the characters. Because at this point in time, Aquaman has his own book, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter is headlining Detective Comics.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the things that take place in the League actually do a lot with the Justice League and vice versa. So this is actually, with the Legion crossing over into Superman, really the beginnings of continuity and a shared universe for all of DC.
So. Oh, yeah. And it's kind of cool, too, because we start to, and we'll really talk about it in the next issue, we start to see things that happen in the other Superman books affecting what's going on in these books. So the big question that is asked, when you have someone blockading all routes of trade, what are you going to do?
Call Ghostbusters?
I guess. See, there's this weird planet called Throom. Throom or Throon? I forget what it is.
Throon with an N.
But they have this weird Monroe Doctrine kind of thing going on. I think I'm going to call it the Planet of the Monroe Doctrines. Because their whole thing is, you leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. But we want you to keep a 30 million mile distance away from us, or else we're going to shoot you with this beam that will cripple your spaceships and cause them to crash and everyone will die. And apparently back in 1964, the universe was a lot smaller than it is today, because 30 million miles was enough to shut down all planetary trade in the galaxy.
Well, 30 million miles, you figure in a circle, that means that you have is it a radius or a diameter that's halfway across?
Well, the radius is halfway across.
So you have a radius of the 35.
So even if it's 60
miles.
Million miles, let's just put this into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The closest star to us besides our sun, the closest star to us is 4.3 light years away. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we're flying to some, and there's even a shot in this comic where there's this little kid staring up at his alien dad, and he's like, "Daddy, where's our food? I'm so hungry." And the dad's like, "Because of the famine that's going on our planet, we need to rely on food coming from other planets. And right now, those ships can't get through, little alien Timmy. And so we may have to die." And little alien Timmy's there with a tear in his eye and his little alien dog Rover. And it's just like, oh, this is horrible. Until you realize that 4.3 light years is close to 6 trillion miles.
Mm-hmm.
So a 30 million mile, you know, barrier between my planet and the space lanes is, it's kind of like saying, hey, how come Gilligan's Island people were never rescued off the island? Because surely they were close to a shipping lane, and surely you could see that from less than 100 miles away, but no.
Well, and I think you have to chalk that up to two things. One, science fiction writers can't do math.
Well, that's true.
And two, really, when you think about it, 60 million miles does seem like an eternity for us as 40-year-olds in the year 2017. For the target 8 to 12-year-old in the year 1964, I think that, you know.
Let me put this into another perspective for you.
Okay.
The planet Jupiter is 588 million kilometers away from Earth. So not even the distance to Jupiter, 30 million miles. But whatever. Apparently, the people of Throon all decided that they would build a giant Tower of Babel and house up inside there and put their thumb down on the entire galactic trade.
Their entire city is one massive giant building, which is kind of cool. It's kind of neat. And the image is remarkable, because I don't think of John Fort as a cool architectural guy, but the cool architecture here of that tower of, if you will, Babel.
I mean, that's what it looked like to me.
Oh, I agree. It looks really, really kind of neat too. So,
yeah. So the answer is, well, we can't get the space police to do anything. Let's get a bunch of teenagers and let's throw them at the situation and see what happens.
At this point in time, the Legion is a legitimate
Sure.
space police force.
Sure.
They have unique powers, and you know, they have a special device that will allow them to give each other concussions to decide who goes into the field.
Yeah,
first.
So this is the interesting thing, and this is probably one of the dumbest. I like the machine where it's just, you know, you spin the, you pull the lever and it brings up whoever's supposed to go on a mission. But this is the first appearance of the Planetary Chance Machine. And the Planetary Chance Machine is where all the Legion members sit around a table and the Planetary Chance Machine decides who will go on missions. Matthew, please explain how the Planetary Chance Machine works.
The Legionnaires gather around the circular table. It's not a round table because that's a thing that knights have. And the Planetary Chance Machine represents basically a planetary system, if you will. And it begins to spin around a larger ball, which I believe represents the sun. And at the appropriate time, it chooses a Legionnaire by lobbing a planet right in their head. So when you are hit on the head by a planet from the Planetary Chance Machine, you are chosen for Legion duty on this particular mission.
Now, you might think that this is one of the, this is like a one and done kind of thing. Oh, this is just some silly thing that they made up for this issue. No, This is something that is used many, many times.
It does recur. It recurs all the way through this original Legion run through volume 4. There is a particularly wonderful moment where the Planetary Chance Machine does, in fact, knock somebody completely unconscious.
Yes.
In the Legion of Substitute Heroes special a few years down the line. But I kind of like this. It's one of those nice little moments that reminds me of, like, you know, we talk about the Nine Planets ice cream parlor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that little touch of cute Legion stuff. This is the way the future works, Stephen. They're going to choose you.
By hitting you upside the head with a golf ball.
Precisely, yes.
By giving you a concussion. Friends? Who needs friends when you have the Legion of Superheroes?
Brainiac 5 was a 13th level intelligence until he was chosen.
Well, Brainiac 5, again, we talked about this before, and it continues to trouble me with Edmund Hamilton. First, he comes up with this Planetary Chance Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. And then he has to throw in a line from Brainiac 5 that says Saturn Girl, Bouncing Boy, Superboy, Lightning Lad, Chameleon Boy, and Invincible Kid, who are all going to go on this mission. But it's too dangerous for a girl. I must eliminate you, Saturn Girl. And then Saturn Girl is like, WTF? I was picked by the Planetary Machine. I'm going on this and I'm going to be tough AF. And then
I claim my right to go, she says.
Well, at least she's standing up to it. But again, it's a panel that is totally, totally not needed in this book. If Otto Binder were alive, he would read this issue and go, oi, Planetary Chance Machine, eliminating Saturn Girl. I'm going to go hunt this guy down and kill him. What a moron.
I don't know about that, but I do agree with you that I'm not liking all of this too dangerous for a girl. There's just, that's a little too much 1964 when it's supposed to be 2964.
Well, especially when you go into the letters column, maybe not for this issue, but in the next issue. And like, granted, they're all talking about Dream Girl, but all the letters are from girls who are like, hey, I really like this. And this is really cool. And this is what this means to me. And da, 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 da. And it's like, you are alienating your audience when more than half the readers are girls. I don't know. It's just, I read that panel. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again.
Yep. It is troublesome. And, you know, right after that, Brainiac 5 is like, well, teamwork is what counts. And
yeah. And he's talking to, who's he talking to? Is it? Yeah, it's one of the dark-haired boys. Maybe it's Superboy.
He's talking to Superboy.
That's
yeah,
right.
You could,
and he goes, teamwork is what counts, and your powers are our best chance. Go for it, Superboy. And it's just like, this is 5 panels later when he was just saying, oh, no, not girls, but go, Superboy, go.
It is problematic, especially from Brainiac. And I believe it was from Brainiac last time. So I'm wondering if maybe it's intentionally in there so that Brainiac gets to be a jerk. I don't know. I don't think
Well, Brainiac is always a jerk, or at least he becomes a jerk later
he eventually
in the book. So maybe this is the Maybe these are planting the seeds that will eventually sprout into Brainiac the Jerk.
Sowing the seeds of Jerk, if you will.
Yes, yes. Sowing the seeds of Jerk.
Also, I want to join the science police so that I, too, can have a helmet made of balloons by a clown at my 8th birthday party.
It's like a pith helmet with a jock strap on it.
No. And it clearly says on the front, SPC chief on the front of his balloon.
Yes.
That's how you know.
Let's kill a bunch of Legionnaires, shall we?
Okay.
So they go onto this planet, and every time they try to approach this tower, the citizens inside throw something at the Legionnaires to cripple them. Which, so like Superboy goes in and flies in, and he's like, oh, it's a good thing there's a yellow sun here so it doesn't zap my powers. But then the people in the tower throw a filter in front of the sun, turning it red. And so Superboy instantly loses his powers. And like there's another one where there's a tentacle monster trying to reach out and grab Chameleon Boy, and there's lightning. And then there's a giant robot to take on Colossal Boy, which actually is pretty cool, by the way.
It is.
But it's like these people inside these tower who really are like, you people leave us alone. We want nothing to do with those of you in the outside. Really know how to take down every member of the Legion of Superheroes. It's very amazing.
It kind of is. And literally, with the exception of Supergirl, and I think we have two honoraries right now, every member of the Legion and the Legion of Substitute Heroes to date appears in this issue.
Yeah, this is really interesting because this is one that, you're right, does bring into, as far as I know, everyone, including Invisible Kid.
Invisible Kid, Shrinking Violet, who tends to get ignored. Mon-El is in it. Of course, we see a lot of Mon-El. But if you look at the breakdown of the teams, everybody's here, including Lightning Lass, wearing her lightning insignia because her new feather suit was still in the wash.
Yeah, even Mon-El gets taken out by some lead because these people in the tower zap him with something that negates his lead poisoning serum.
They know all of the Legionnaires' weaknesses. They know that the electric charges will take out Bouncing Boy and Chameleon Boy. Mm-hmm. They know that Lightning Lad can be grounded in a steel cage. They know that Sun Boy is just a douche. A Sun Boy issue.
So, I mean, let's not forget about Stone Boy. Finally, the substitute heroes have to come in. And so as they parachute in, they're like, hey, Polar Boy is freezing it, and Fire Lad is burning things, and Chlorophyll Kid is growing some trees, and Stone Boy has turned himself into stone. I can see why the Legion never picked up on this guy.
You know what? He does better than many of the active Legionnaires.
Yes. Yes. So this is the first time, I'll admit this, this is the first time that I actually thought Colossal Boy's Space Cowboy costume actually worked. For some reason, I finally saw this thing and I was like, you know what? This actually does look like a cool costume when you're a giant, you know, 50-foot guy walking around with a spaceship in your hands with your cowboy gloves. And I think he really does need like cowboy boots. I think that would really make the ensemble really work. But if you're talking about like Roy Rogers, Space Cowboy, or if you're talking about Meteor Men on the Moon or anything like that, this kind of really feels like that kind of a sci-fi cowboy getup.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally strikes me that, yeah, that's actually pretty cool.
And the big studded belt really sets the whole thing off. It looks really good. And he looks awesome fighting down this robot. He's one of the few who actually get in a few good licks, because even Mon-El goes down before he gets in a shot.
Yep.
Most of the Legion is taken down almost instantaneously.
Which means it is up to the Legion of Substitute Heroes to save the day. And once again, it is up to Nightgirl to go in and bust into the Citadel and defeat the entire citizenry of this Thrune planet. Oh, and I should mention that the entire citizenry are two old men who are hunched over some machines going, ha, 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 we'll get these guys.
It's Randolph and Winston who would later go on to tell Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy that they should trade places.
Yeah, no, really, it kind of looks like that. But
doesn't it? Looks like Ralph Bellamy and Don Amici. That's what they look like.
Yeah. So they shut down the shenanigans of the planet Thrune, turn off the 30 million mile death ray, and promise that no one will come and bother you two old men. Trust us.
We'll just leave you alone here on your planet. Just stop taking out everybody's ships. It is such an isolationist parable.
Oh, you two old men want to be left alone to your own devices until you wither and die? Okay, we'll see ya. Just don't shoot down any more spaceships. And then the Legion of Substitute Heroes get a parade at the end.
Which I think is great because, you know, we initially saw the subs get dissed. I mean, they weren't treated terribly. They weren't like run out of the place like Lester Spiffany or Storm Boy. But they were all like, nope, sorry, nope.
At what point do the Legion of Superheroes, because this is like the third time the Substitute Heroes have saved the day.
Yep.
At what point did the Legion go, you know, Night Girl, we're not really, she's actually kind of, why did we get rid of her again? And when do they just finally say, you know what, we need to add these people back to our team because they actually are super useful?
That happens in the 2080s.
Yeah.
All of the subs end up joining the Legion during the lost years. Mm-hmm. You know, that we talk about the five-year gap later. Every once in a while. Mm-hmm. All of these Legionnaires join during the 5-year gap.
Yeah. It's just interesting that it's like, hey, they've pulled our butts out of the fire 3 times now. Mm-hmm. Too bad we can't make any of them Legion members because we already rejected them once.
Well, I wonder.
Now, don't they end up using the Substitute Heroes as kind of their like Black Ops team?
In the Volume 4 Legion, yes. The subs actually become kind of an underground secret force working for the second Invisible Kid, who is actually the president of Earth at the time. And that's the thing about these guys is when they were thrown off of the Legion or when they were, you know, voted out, drummed out, all of them are more capable and more powerful than some of the people that got in. And somebody finally, you know, took notice of that and went, why did they reject them? And then we find out that they all have crippling social disorders, essentially. It's true.
Yeah, no, one of them's a stalker. One of them freezes up every time you need him. Another one that just gives you the cold shoulder all the time.
Oh, waka waka. So, Polar Boy not only makes it into the Legion, but actually becomes Legion leader at one point. So we can't give Polar Boy too much static. But it can. I mean, he's Polar Boy.
Before we get into the second segment of this week's Legion Clubhouse, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a copy of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes Volume 1. This was donated by one of our listeners, and we're giving it away. How do you get your hands on this? Well, you head to majorspoilers.com/giveaway, and you just follow the directions there. This is only for U.S. residents. Unfortunately, shipping to other countries and all the paperwork and tax stuff that goes with it doesn't make it worth our time or your time. But for those of you in the U.S. that want to get your hands on a copy of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes Volume 1, head over to majorspoilers.com/giveaway and enter today. Good luck, everyone.
Adventure Comics number 320, The Revenge of the Knave from Krypton. Published May 1964. Written by Edmund Hamilton with art by John Forte and George Papp. Will another son of Krypton steal Superboy's place in the Legion?
What is it about rich kids always wanting to get into the Legion of Superheroes? There's a deeper message going on in these books because every time that we get a lame recruit, someone who's trying out, but all these guys that are trying to gimmick their way into the Legion of Superheroes are all rich kids. For example, in this issue, we meet Radiation Ray. Radiation Roy. Can't read my own typing there. Who has the power to, you know, send off radiation and make things weak or decay or whatever, you know, kill you, basically. He's an atomic kid.
Right.
And we find out that he's a kid living off of his inheritance and is just like, hey, subject me to all of the crazy experiments so I can get superpowers and join the Legion of Superheroes.
Mm-hmm. I think what we're really seeing here is some 60s classism. The expectation that, you know, the rich people who try to use their money to get by and to buy their way into places where they should never be are clearly not going to be heroic. Your heroes are the nice people.
Are we seeing classism here? Are we seeing echoes of the one percenters here, where the comic books are trying to tell people, watch out for those rich people because they've always got something up their sleeve. They're always trying to rip you off. They're trying to be in places where they don't belong. They're trying to kill you with their radiations. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way to look at that, because this is, you know, Lester Spiffany, Radiation Roy. We've had at least one or two other quote unquote rich kids who've tried to buy their way into the Legion. And it's just like, no, Richie, you go away. I wonder if this means that Radiation Roy and Lester Spiffany, if they're the Socias and the Legion of Superheroes are the Greasers.
They're the outsiders.
Yeah.
Stay gold, Ultra Boy.
He'll try. He didn't.
He didn't. Yeah. Technically, he's orange and not gold.
I don't know. There has to be some kind of underlying message in why this is always happening, because it's not like some poor kid has scraped up his 2 cents and he's like, hey, I've got superpowers, Legion of Superheroes. Sorry, I can't talk very loud. I haven't eaten anything because I'm poor. And then kicking him to the curb. No, it's always these rich kids that are coming in that they're like, no, go away. We don't want you.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not mistaken, now think forward. What's his name? The xenophobe. Earth Boy, or whatever his name is.
Leland McCauley. Oh, Earthman. Absorbency Boy, originally.
Didn't he also come from a Richie Rich group?
I don't remember if Absorbency Boy did, because, well, his time as Earthman made me angry.
Well, of course, that's supposed to make everybody angry.
He was just, they did a whole redemption arc where they're like, well, we know that he's a murderous psychopath, but... gosh, doesn't he have a heroic heart? And the answer is no. No, he doesn't. He's the devil.
Well, but, oh, speaking of kind of redemption stories, that's what this one is. This is the Revenge of the Knave from Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
And we get introduced. Who is what?
Who is one of my favorite Superman supporting cast members, because in his first appearance a few years before this, Devem was literally just an irredeemable jerk. He was awful. And so when we get into this story, Superboy does not trust this guy, who's really one of his friends. I mean,
who's one of the last survivors of Krypton, right?
Right.
It's fascinating, because now, did Devem first appear in Adventure Comics, or was he in Action Comics, or was he a Superboy comics?
Adventure 287, which would be after the second appearance of the Legion.
Okay.
But I believe before they started having the regular backup feature in this book.
Okay. So, again, this is another example of, let's dive back into some Legion history, which, you know, is not maybe 40 issues ago. So it's about 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And let's resurrect this character, Devem, who is just the worst kid in the world.
Yes, he is literally, they mean it in the medieval sense that he's a jerk.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going on with our Outsiders reference, he would be what, 2-bit or something?
I don't know. I haven't seen the Outsiders in years.
Oh, man. He would be the Emilio Estevez of the group.
You know how Dirty Steve dies and Charlie dies? Yeah. But Dick gets shot at the mill.
Yeah.
He would be somewhere between Dick and the guy that Billy kills in the second movie.
Okay.
He's Arkansas Dave.
All right. So tell us more about Devem, because they do a whole bunch of flashback stuff, basically retelling his history. And I'm wondering if it is actually redrawing from the previous issue, or I mean, is this literally a retelling of the previous appearance of Devem?
Oddly enough, it's not the panel for panel things that we've seen from Fort in the past, but it is a pretty faithful retelling. Devem basically hears Jor-El's warnings and actually puts himself in suspended animation. And he's in a ship in space as an adult. He actually knew baby Kal-El, which does throw some continuity issues in as to how old Superboy or Super Baby was when he left Krypton.
Well, he was definitely a toddler in this flashback.
What did he me-am? Yes, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Me-am Superboy. Me-am eventually going to save world.
Yeah.
Me-am Bizarro. But yes, and Dev-Em came to Earth, stuck Superboy in the Phantom Zone with monsters and murderers and, you know, everybody his father ever locked up, and tried to take over being Superboy. So, yeah, this is a pretty similar retelling. He eventually gets tired and flies off into the future.
I guess because he doesn't age. That's why he eventually find himself inside the Phantom Zone for 1,000 years?
I believe he just flew through the time barrier the way Superboy did.
Ah, okay. All right.
He just basically got tired of the 20th century and flew off into the future.
Interesting. Or maybe not. But, again, as you said, Superboy just doesn't trust anything that Dev-Em is trying to do. And so they know that there's this guy, Morlock the Merciless, who's kind of like a... He kind of reminds me of Jabba the Hutt before they did the CGI version of Jabba the Hutt. You know, in the original Star Wars where it's this guy... No, where it's this guy in this, like, brown fur vest and a hat walking around.
In the furry vest, yeah.
That's kind of who Morlock the Merciless reminds me of, because he's this intergalactic gangster, and the Legion is going to try to bring him down. And so Superboy disguises himself as Dev-Em and goes in and tries to pretend that he's Dev-Em to try to get the drop on this gang.
And it's another one of those stories where we see him involved in this weird stuff and they show us strange future things like the tranquilized globes. And we get little bits of history and things that we, you know, we do not or should not know. And then, of course, I always look at Morlock and I'm like, doesn't he look a little bit like Bouncy
Boy? He does.
Are they saying that all fat people look alike?
Well, maybe. Or the other read that you could take on it is, what if this is a future incarnation of Bouncing Boy when he decides to go to the dark side?
This is probably Bouncing Boy's dad.
Maybe.
Bouncing Man.
That's who it is. So the upshot is, Superboy convinces the gang that he's Dev-Em, and Morlock is like, hey, man, or Moloch is like, hey, let me give you a reward for doing all these great things. How about some gold kryptonite? And we all know what gold kryptonite does to a Kryptonian.
Gold kryptonite. Yes, it removes their powers permanently and forever. And they just did it to Superboy.
Oh, no. How is that?
Which caused just like a massive universal thing and destroyed the entire.
Yeah, how are they going to fix that? Well, the surprise is what we thought was gold kryptonite was actually Prodi 2. Prodi 2 slipped in Superman's cape, went to the gangster planet, and then while Superboy was showing him this dazzling bright flash grenade, Prodi 2 slipped into the gold kryptonite box and became gold kryptonite.
So that when Superboy, as Dev-Em, was exposed to gold kryptonite, it didn't actually krypton your gold.
And so Superboy's fine. Everybody catches the gangsters. Moloch says, I'll get you, super friends. And then we find out the most shocking thing is that Dev-Em has actually reformed, and he's part of the International Secret Society of Super Spies.
The Interstellar Counter Corps, or Counterintelligence Corps, and he's the one.
Wait, what is that again?
The Interstellar Counterintelligence Corps, the ICC.
The ICI? He's a member of ICI?
He's a member of the ICI. He's got the ICI, and you need to get that special stuff so it'll clear up his fins.
Yeah.
And keep him in his own bowl, or else he'll attack all the other Dev-Ems. But it was his plan, and he's the one who snuck Prodi 2 into the Dev-Em cape, which, by the way, is a little disturbing because Dev-Em literally took off his clothes and handed them to Superboy.
No, he didn't. He gave him another suit or something.
And then you'll notice Dev-Em is wearing Brainiac 5's spare purple coveralls.
Yeah.
he gave Superboy his suit. He's like, here's this thing that I've been wearing, this skin-tight sweat machine. Go ahead and put
that
on.
It's leather. Yeah, it's leather. And then, you know, apparently it's just okay for everybody to walk around with capes. That was the weirdest thing. It's like, oh, Devim is walking around and he's got a white cape and everybody's just walking around with him and no one seems to think that a cape is really weird. I guess it is the future.
It is the future. The future means capes.
Here's the other thing that's really kind of crazy in this issue. Prodi 2 starts talking.
Telepathically, yeah.
What the what?
Well, they did mention, and I don't remember now if it was Prodi or Prodi 2 who could telepathically communicate with Saturn Girl.
Yeah, that was Prodi 1.
And then they bonded, and then, of course, he died. But the implication there was not 100% clear whether she was telepathically communicating with him or whether he was telepathic. In this issue, for what I believe is the first time, we discover that Proteans are telepathic and can talk telepathically.
Okay, so let's think about that.
Okay.
Proteans are these living creatures that can shapeshift into anything.
Yes.
They have the ability to communicate telepathically, mm-hmm. and yet when we first meet the Proteans, they are locked up in a zoo.
And Chameleon Boy immediately says, I'm going to make this one my pet.
Yeah, that is not creepy at all.
Oh, not even a little bit.
All right, so here's the bigger question. We're talking about redemption stories. What makes a redemption story work? And does the redemption trope, plot, gimmick, does it work here with Devim?
It does. For two reasons. One, the first time we met Devim in that previous story, and everything that we really need to know about it is recapped here. He's kind of flighty and jerkish. He's a knave, literally. But he's not evil. He doesn't, like, try to kill Superboy or remove his powers or expose him to kryptonite or lock him up. Yes, he sticks him in the zone, but it feels more like he sticks him in the zone just kind of because he's not thinking it through and not out of any sense of actual nefariousness on his part. So that we saw that appearance and he was a jerk. And now he gets a chance to save Superboy's life and he comes through with flying colors. I feel like here, because Devim was seen as being a jerk, a practical joker, maybe thoughtless and kind of crude, and then pulled it out and said, no, I'm going to be an international super spy for the ICC. It works. Had it been, say, oh, I don't know, a character, we'll call him Earthman, who killed Legionnaires and imprisoned Sunboy and tried to kill Polar, ripped off Polar Boy's arm.
Yeah.
Tried to kill Polar Boy and went through all of these things. I would say that maybe a redemption arc is a lot more difficult to pull off.
Hmm. Here they did it in 20 pages.
They always do it in 20 pages in the Silver Age, my friend. That's how we do it.
Matthew, what did we learn this week at the Legion Clubhouse?
We learned that sometimes it seems like the whole world is against you and that there are evil forces that are trying to destroy everything, but it's really just two old crotchety guys in a room.
I think we also learned that if our powers go unchecked, Matthew and I will end up being the two crotchety guys in a room telling everyone to keep a 30 million mile distance or we will take their spaceships down.
That's right. Randolph, we're back. And I think most importantly, we learned that with 19 members, if you bring everybody in, not everybody's going to get a moment to fall down. So you get like half a panel of Lightning Lass and no explanation of why she's wearing the wrong clothes.
And finally, we get to meet Sunboy. One is Sunboy, one's a robot, and one's an android.
I presume. It's probably his operating system.
Maybe.
The robot runs on iOS 1254. That's why the other one's an android.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out. And thank you to all of our patrons who make this show happen. Again, if you found some value in this, if you learned a little bit of something about the Silver Age or about the Legion of Superheroes, how about we do some value for value? We provided some value to you. How about you provide a little back our way by heading over to patreon.com/majorspoilers and signing up today. The more people we get means the more shows that we can produce for you. And that's what we are most excited about, producing content for you each and every week. So until next time, I'm Mi Ved.
And I'm Rutabaga Roy.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.